Hi, this is Josh from Decipher Down. Thanks for listening to Do Not Keep Silent. Get involved to EquippedGeneration.com.
Welcome to Do Not Keep Silent.
Speaking out the name of Jesus in action and word.
Encouraging and equipping.
Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves.
Do what it says. Do not keep silent.
Welcome into Do Not Keep Silent, everybody. This is Jason DeZurich, and so glad you are tuning in today. We have a wonderful guest with us. Before we get to him, though, don't forget, go to donotkeepsilent.com to find out more information about what we're doing and our parent ministry, worldviewwarriors.com. That's worldviewwarriors.com to find our blogs and other podcasts we do. And obviously, you're listening to one of our podcasts right now or the radio station. You're hearing our show, and we have a guest who is an author who has recently penned a book called American to the Backbone. Now, our guest's name is Christopher Weber, and he's a graduate of Princeton University, and just a lot of books he has written. And so I just want to jump right into it, if it's okay with you, Christopher, because of our time and such. And so you can find out information on our website about him, everybody. But Christopher Weber is our guest. How are you doing today, Christopher?
I'm doing well. Excellent.
Yes, and we're going to be talking today. People need to really understand about history, don't they, Christopher?
Well, I think we don't know enough about our history. I must admit that I didn't know very much about the abolition movement before the Civil War, for example, until I got into this research, and I've learned a great deal.
Yes.
I didn't teach black history when I was in school, and I've said about this, I've learned white history, which is maybe the other side of the same coin.
Okay. Okay, and your book, you actually write about, it begins in 1827, and it chronicles the life of someone named James Pennington, who was a 19-year-old who was scared and illiterate and just escaped from slavery. And he actually became a pretty outspoken voice for against slavery prior to the Civil War. Is that correct?
That's correct. I think it's an amazing story, the fact that at the age of 19, he was both illiterate and he'd never heard of Jesus. And you know, people think, well, heavenly days, didn't they teach anything about Christianity? Well, a lot of slave owners didn't, because they're afraid if slaves began to learn about Christianity, they began to learn about Christian faith, they learned about Moses, they would pick up some ideas about freedom, and that wasn't necessarily in their favor. So here is a man who grew up never hearing about Jesus. And when he finally did escape from slavery, he knew there was freedom. He knew that somewhere to the north there was a free state. And he thought at the age of 19 he'd better go if he was ever going to be free. This was his chance. He was young, he was strong, and he would take off. And so one Sunday afternoon he tucked a piece of bread in his pocket and took off. It took him 8 days. Make a long story short, it took him 8 days.
Wow.
Because he was heading the wrong way. He got captured twice, escaped both times. And finally, on the eighth day, he did find himself in Pennsylvania, and he got directed to the home of a Quaker. And it's a beautiful story, I think. So he comes to the door of this man, he knocks on the door, and the Quaker, William Wright, opened the door, and Pennington said, I'm looking for work. And William Wright said, welcome in then, and take thy breakfast, and get warm, and we will talk about it. Thee must be cold without any coat. And I think it's so beautiful. Here's this man who's out of his faith, finds a complete stranger at the door, and says, well, come in, and we will talk about it. And for the first time in his life, Pennington was treated as a human being. We will talk about it. Not, I will tell you what to do, but we will talk. We will talk together. And so in that home, he was first exposed to Christian faith, and he traveled on from that to the home of another Quaker toward Philadelphia, and again, they gave him his first Bible, and he began memorizing whole chapters of the Bible. So here's a man who'd never had a chance to learn anything, and now he was given an opportunity not only to learn to read and write, but he was given a Bible and given a chance to learn about Christian faith. And to make a long story short, within a year he was in Brooklyn. And in Brooklyn, there were all the opportunities of a big city. You know, there were night schools, there were Sunday schools, and he got involved in all of that. And just soaked up information like a sponge, so that within 5 years he was actually hired to be a school teacher. And by that time he had already encountered a Christian faith at a deeper level, because his host family, the family that took him in Brooklyn, gave him a job as a coachman. They were members of a Presbyterian church, and they invited their pastor home one day for Sunday lunch, and then left him with James Pennington, who by this time was really seeking for faith. He was agonizing over the fact that he did not yet have a relationship with Jesus. And so the pastor was able to sit down with him and bring him into that relationship, from which his life just expanded exponentially. He found a black congregation in Manhattan that he joined, and you know what happens, a young man comes to your church, and he's eager to learn, and next thing you know, you have him taking part, maybe doing a reading on Sunday morning or being an usher. And so Pennington very quickly found a place and a welcome in this Christian congregation, so much so that within a year or two they were saying, we need to get you to seminary because you've clearly got a vocation in ministry. And it was arranged, indeed, that now 7 years after he had escaped from slavery, they did accept him at Yale, at the Divinity School at Yale. They'd never had a black student and didn't quite know what to make of it. But they said, well, if you sit in the back row and don't ask questions, we won't put you in the catalog, but you can attend classes. And so he did that. And under those circumstances, he learned some basic principles that just guided his life. Of course, a deeper knowledge of the Christian faith. But the principal teacher at the Divinity School is a man named Nathaniel Taylor. And he would say over and over again, he would talk about the moral providence of God, or the moral government of God, which is to say that all things are in God's hands. And we can be confident that what is good and what is just is God's purpose, and that's what we're working with God toward, that purpose. And that, I think, undergirded Pennington's ministry. You hear that phrase come up again and again in his sermons and his writing, the moral providence of God. I think it's very parallel to what Martin Luther King Jr. talked about when he said the arc of history is long, but it bends toward justice. You know, it's that confidence that God is working a purpose out in human lives. And that purpose has to do with justice. And for somebody like Pennington, I think it enabled him to face all the hardships of life as a fugitive slave, as a black man in a segregated society, and to be confident that what the Bible talked about, what the Declaration of Independence talked about, all men are created equal, that these things would come to pass if you would work confidently, patiently, toward those goals.
I think that is exciting, because today there's so many people that would talk or just bring up and say, moral providence of God, where is it? There's suffering, there's pain, and people go off about that. Now you're talking, this is a gentleman who definitely knew suffering and pain as a black man who was a slave.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I mean, that is amazing to me. It sounds like a story we need to hear today.
I think it is. That's where we need to be open and listen to other people and work with other people and find that way that God is drawing us toward. And that word and that direction is always, of course, toward freedom and justice. So those are the basic principles that undergirded his life. And he went on from that. You know, he graduated from seminary. He went back to Brooklyn, but he was very quickly called to a parish in Hartford, Connecticut. And in the first few years that he was in Hartford, he wrote the first black history. And, of course, it's full of the way God is working in history. But he was also chosen as a delegate to a convention on the abolition of slavery in London. And so here he is only 10 years out of slavery, being chosen as a delegate to an international convention in London. And he got to London, and for the first time, he was welcomed into white congregations. Hadn't happened, even in Connecticut.
Wow.
But in England, yes. He was invited into churches. He was invited to preach to white congregations, to minister communion to a white congregation. And he came back to Connecticut with a whole new outlook on things. You know, the other clergy exchanged pulpits. They'd never exchanged pulpits with him. And so he went to the clergy meetings. He said, in England, I was treated as an equal. Why do you not invite me into your pulpits? And then they began to do that. That opened up opportunities for him that hadn't been there before. But, you know, it's amazing to me, and I hadn't really understood. It's why I say I learned white history from reading this book, that I had not understood the way white people before the Civil War tended to look at black people. And in Hartford, for example, there were two leading congregational clergy, large congregations. Horace Bushnell is still famous in Hartford. His name is on civic buildings and so on. He was pastor of one church, and a man called Joel Hawes was pastor of the Center Church, the big old congregational church in Hartford. And both of these men thought slavery was wrong, but neither of them did much about it. They thought it's a personal matter. Faith is a personal matter, and this is a social issue, so we don't need to get involved. And besides that, they thought, well, Horace Bushnell thought that black people were going to die out anyway. He thought they were an inferior race. Mm. So you encounter these attitudes among well-intentioned, liberal, northern, white clergy, and it's somewhat of a shock.
Yes.
Or again, to give you another example, I went to the State History Society, the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford, and asked for street directories because I wanted to find out where Pennington had lived and that kind of thing. And they brought me the street directories for the years he was there. And I looked for him in the first issue. He wasn't there. Of course, that's the year he moved there. But the second year, he wasn't listed either, or the third year. And the fourth year, finally, the Hartford Street Directory includes black people in a separate section after the main list of white people.
Wow.
So, and to add to it, in the previous directories, you could look and you would find the number of sheep and cows in the city of Hartford, but not the number of black people. So, this, as I say, this is an eye-opener.
Yes, it is. Very much so.
This is how far we've come.
Welcome to Do Not Keep Silent. Speaking out the name of Jesus in action and word.
Encouraging and equipping.
Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves.
Do what it says. Do not keep silent.